Earth, Volume 3, The Gathering, Chapter 12. "Hadid, I can't stay down here forever," said Riker, sitting down with force into the office chair behind the desk in the deep underground vault. "I know what you're feeling, but the priority is to keep you safe," said Hadid. "How am I supposed to be president down here?" asked Riker. "We are all working to secure the area, Mr. President," said Hadid. "With respect, Hadid, that's a bunch of crap. This is supposed to be the safest place in the country. They open the outer door like a car door, and they just killed a young boy who was doing nothing. He didn't deserve that," said Riker, raising his voice. "They rarely do, Mr. President. War is always like this," said Hadid. "The hell it is. Soldiers march and planes fly and boats sail, and that's how armies go to war. These monsters are cowards, moving like ghosts," said Riker. "That is the new kind of war. Dead people aren't afraid," said Hadid. "Afraid? This is all about fear? Why?" asked Riker. "Fear is much more powerful than love. It leads to despair and self-deprecation. They only seek God for revenge on their enemies," said Hadid. "I thought love was the most powerful thing in the universe," said Riker. "We're talking about the ends of the spectrum, like red and blue," said Hadid. "He's right," said Lorraine, walking into the office. "Oh, good. I was going crazy down here," said Riker. "How is Shelley?" "Smith said she's going to recover just fine and be ready for her broadcast later today. She is, of course, heartbroken at the death of Orphan," said Lorraine. "I know what they're doing. They pick off one person and scare the hell out of everyone else," said Riker. "They want you to strike back. But you can't let yourself have those feelings," said Lorraine. "Don't worry. I'm not sending anybody to war," said Riker. "We have set up some defensive measures, but these drones are designed to be self-operating if they lose communication. They have a facial recognition program built in," said Hadid. "The perfect assassin," said Riker. "They only last a few days in parked position. If they fly, they die," said Hadid. "If they fly, we die," said Riker, slamming his hand on the desk. "I'm going up there to see her." "This will turn against them," said Lorraine. "How? How can you turn this against them? They don't feel anything. They have no regrets and no mercy on anyone," said Riker, choking. "He was just a boy, with his whole life ahead of him." "Like the Cathars," said Hadid. "The who?" asked Riker. "The Cathars, like the Gnostics who preceded them, followed the teachings of the 13th Apostle, Mary Magdalene, in the spread of early Christianity. From May 1243 to March 1244, the Cathar fortress of Montsegur was besieged by the Pope's troops of the Seneschal of Carcassonne. On the 16th of March, 1244, they were surrounded and given an ultimatum. 204 of their knights were ordered to march into a fire, under the condition that their wives and children would be set free. Their faith that they would be resurrected was so strong that they laid down their arms and marched into the fire with smiles on their faces. Thousands of the Pope's soldiers were converted that day," said Hadid, speaking like a witness to the event. "Are you saying Orphan's death is like that?" asked Riker, barely able to speak. "I think he's saying that your reaction to his death has the power to save this world," said Lorraine, moving to him and placing her hand on his shoulder. "I remember the day the Twin Towers came down. It tore my heart open. My wife and I watched it together and cried. Her mercy inspired me to run for president," said Riker, looking into the wood grain of his desk. "What would you have done?" asked Hadid. "I remember Bush taking that bullhorn from the fire marshal and giving his speech from on top of that rubble. Americans bought every flag in the country and lined up behind him to go to war. Those words changed the world into the tyrannical mess we have now. We talked about a different response that day, said Riker. Don't make me get into that conspiracy, said Lorraine, trying to hold back her own feelings. That's not the point. I would have told the world it was a terrible act of terror. I would have cleaned up that mess and rebuilt those towers. I would have told the world that no one, no matter how evil, was going to make us end our own freedom and liberty out of fear. I would have left our airports alone. I would never have treated our own people as the enemy of the state. The national forgiveness would have changed the world to something quite different, I think, said Riker. We have a chance to do that here, said Lorraine. My wife died 6 months later, in her sleep. I may join her soon, for all I know, but I will not become like them, said Riker, looking up into her eyes. We'll be on our way soon enough, Bob. You're a good man, said Lorraine, smiling down into his eyes. Hadid smiled softly and put his hand on Riker's other shoulder. It is an honor to serve you, Mr. President, he said with his perfect voice. I will be back this afternoon. I have much to do. I'll get Shelley to the camera as soon as I can, and then I'm going to the lab. I have a feeling Kyle is getting close. He needs me, said Lorraine, sliding her hand off his shoulder and extending it to shake Hadid's hand. Thank you, Lorraine, said Hadid. They don't call you the Iron Bar for nothing, said Lorraine, and she turned to walk out of the office. Lorraine, would you bring the Joint Chiefs down here when you get back? I have some changes to make to our defense plans, said Riker. Yes, sir. Get some rest, said Lorraine, knowing he would do no such thing. She walked down the quiet hallway to the desk and picked up the phone sitting on the desk. She dialed Sarah's number. It rang twice, and she answered. Hello? Sarah, this is Lorraine. Can you meet me at the hospital in 10 minutes, she asked. Yes, ma'am. I'll be there, said Sarah. Wear your sneakers, and bring a hanky. We're going to be moving fast, said Lorraine. See you there, said Sarah, hanging up the phone softly. Lorraine walked like she was in a dream. The events were unfolding before her as though they were on a piece of film unrolling from a fateful roll. She tried to stay awake and remember to look around, trying not to stay on the tracks stretching out before her. She could feel the choices she had to make, the things she had to say. She could feel Semyaza's gaze on her neck, and she wanted to turn around and face him. She could hear the music in her heart sadly playing the story of a world that was dying as the forest burned around her. But she knew that the refiner made a purer gold from the souls of men by such fires. She could almost see the faces of the Cathars looking at one another side by side as they walked into the pyre the Pope's armies had built at the base of their fortress hill. They didn't scream, although the heat scorched their lungs and melted their eyelids away. Their deaths were made sweet by their faith in Christ, and she knew better than anyone that those souls walked this world again, two by two, here and there, through the ages, telling their story to save the lost and the downtrodden. Two by two, she said to herself, realizing that she had always been just one. Her breath shivered as the elevator rose through the dark shaft in the ground of floor of Building E, hundreds of feet above the presidential vault. The seed of Cain had formed churches that misguided mankind for millennia, and soon, very soon, this earth would shed that mantle of wickedness forever, and return home to that God that had given it life, but not before that dark mind would build another fire. The elevator doors opened, and the soldier stepped back into the elevator and nodded to the soldier guarding the lobby doors. He stepped forward, and she exited the elevator and headed for the doors to the street outside. The soldier at the doors was looking outside the glass before he opened the doors. "Ma'am, would you mind putting this over your face?" he asked as he handed her what looked like a black silk mask. "What's this for?" she asked. "We don't know if there's another drone out there." "Your face, ma'am. My sergeant says your face might be on the list." "It's for your protection," he said, waiting for her to take it from his hand. "It's a good thing I don't wear makeup," she said, smiling at the soldier. She politely took the black silk and slipped it over her face with the eye holes lining up. "They don't make one for this mop, do they?" she said, as her thick, curly hair kept the silk tight against her face. "I see what you mean. I'll check on that," said the soldier. "Oh, it's okay. It sounds smart, actually." "Can I go now?" she asked nicely. "Yes, ma'am," he said, opening the glass doors for her and pointing to the cart waiting with the soldier in the driver's seat. "Thank you. Have a good day," she said, walking briskly for the cart and sliding into the seat. She could see the streaks left on the white sidewalk in front of the cart where the drone had exploded earlier. She wondered how they got the blood off the concrete without leaving the sidewalk wet. "Building A, please," she told the driver. "Yes, ma'am," said the soldier as he reached for the microphone clipped to his collar. "Leaving E now, heading for A," he said as he waited for the response. "Roger, we have eyes on you. Clear to go," said the speaker on his radio. "Roger that," he said, putting his hand on the wheel while he switched the cart into reverse. Within a second or two, the cart was humming down the street next to the granite wall on their right. She could feel the cool air chill the silk against her face, and suddenly she felt embarrassed, riding down the street with a sack over her head. The cart slowed as the driver brought it smoothly to the curb and stopped. She hopped out of the cart and walked quickly for the glass doors, where the soldier was holding the door open for her. "Can I take it off now?" she asked him. "If you would, ma'am, please wait till you're in the elevator," said the soldier. "No problem," she said, knowing that there might be another drone out there. She focused on Shelley while the elevator doors opened and she walked in alone. She took the mask off and pulled the hair out of her face. She took a few deep breaths to clear the tension from her mind and waited for the doors to open onto the hospital floor. The doors opened, and she waited for the soldier to clear it before she walked to the nurse's station. "Hi, can you tell me which room for Shelley LaSalle?" asked Lorraine. "She's in outpatient surgery down the hall and to the left," said the nurse. "Is she okay?" asked Lorraine. "I think she's getting cleaned up. Nothing serious," said the nurse. "Hi, Lorraine," said the female voice from behind her. "Oh, Sarah, I'm so glad you're here. I have a feeling Shelley's going to need some clothes. Come with me, and let's get her keys and a little shopping list from her closet," said Lorraine, grabbing her hand and starting to walk for the end of the hall. "I'm with you," said Sarah, stretching her long legs out to keep up with Lorraine. They rounded the corner to see two soldiers outside the door, halfway down the hall. "That must be the place," said Lorraine, not breaking her stride. The soldiers both looked up and moved out of the way to let the two ladies through with a short nod as their eyes scanned one way and then the other. "Shelley, we came as fast as we could," said Lorraine. "Oh my God, I'm so glad to see you," said Shelley as she reached out with her good arm and began to cry. "Shelley, you'll have to stay still while I get this pulled together," said the doctor. "Okay, okay, I'll stay still," said Shelley, sitting back on the exam table. "Listen, you're going to need some clothes, right?" asked Lorraine. "Yeah, but don't throw that dress away. I don't want to lose it. You understand?" she said softly. "Yes, I understand," not letting go of Shelley's hand as she felt her begin calming. "Orphan, he's..." began Shelley. "I know, baby, I know. We'll talk all you want when you get finished. I'm not going anywhere. But Sarah can go to your place and get you another dress. Can she have your keys? And do you have a selection in mind?" asked Lorraine. Yeah, sure. My keys are clipped to the outside of my purse over there. Just pick any dress in the closet. I'm not picky, said Shelley. That makes it easy. Take off, Sarah, and keep your head down. Move fast, but be safe, said Lorraine, looking her in the eyes. Yes, ma'am. I'll be back in a flash, said Sarah. I just came from the president, Shelley. He wants you to go on this afternoon anyway, said Lorraine. Are you kidding? A team of horses could not keep me away. Those bastards are going to pay, said Shelley, putting an edge on her voice. That's what I want to talk to you about, said Lorraine, putting her hand between both of hers and gently massaging it. Just close your eyes. Take a few deep breaths. I can hear your heart, Shelley. When Sarah gets back, we'll go over to see the chef and have some yummy tea and talk, said Lorraine as Shelley took a few shaky breaths and started to relax. That's much better. I think this is dry. Let me stick this on the one over your eye. There, that looks pretty good, said the doctor. She looks like a prize fighter, Doc, said Lorraine. Look at it this way. Your nose isn't broken, and this probably won't scar at all, he said, picking up the wrappers from the adhesive strips. You don't look like a prize fighter. You look like a warrior. Now, go give him hell, said the doctor. Oh, thanks, Doc. Actually, I think we've had enough hell for one day. We're going to do something else, said Lorraine. Have a nice day, ladies, said the doctor as he walked out the door. The bedside manner of a military doctor, said Lorraine, shaking her head. Yeah, well, I'm kind of getting tired of people trying to kill me, said Shelley with a slight whimper to her voice. They're not trying to kill you. They're trying to kill the words you say and the way you say them. Billions of people all over the world are being led through the desert toward the promised land by your voice and your words, said Lorraine. That's what Abdullah said, said Shelley. Well, he was right. Every great story has a face, and you are the face, said Lorraine. None the worse for wear, said Shelley, trying to smile. Now is not the time to get deeper into this. We need some mint tea and an almond cake, said Lorraine, trying to keep Shelley from crashing into the state of shock hovering above her. Why don't you close your eyes and listen to my voice for a few minutes while we wait for Sarah, said Lorraine. Okay. I feel better, believe it or not, but okay, said Shelley as she took a deep breath and exhaled slowly, letting Lorraine hold her hand. Take one more and just think about your breath going into your lungs. Hold it for a few seconds and let the negative energy in you gather in that breath. Now, exhale that breath slowly, letting the negativity go out through your nose. That's better. Do that one more time and just feel my hands around yours. Much better, said Lorraine with her soft voice, carrying her deep into a state of relaxation and calmness. Shelley closed her eyes and relaxed her head into the pillow on the chair like exam table. Within a minute she was in a deep state of calm. Lorraine held on to her hand, letting the energy flow from her heart, down her arms and into Shelley's hand. She opened her mind to reach into Shelley's thoughts to unscramble the last couple of hours. Not enough time had passed for her to be truly afraid. Yet, she was not ready to believe Orphan was gone. Shelley didn't see his body, so the reality of his death had no image to go with it. Okay, I'm back, said Sarah as she stepped through the door with a hanger in her hand. There was a one-piece dress with a floral print. She hung it on the door handle on one of the top cabinets in the outpatient exam room. What did I miss? Nothing much, said Lorraine as she gently released Shelley's hand and let her open her eyes. Wow, that feels much better. How did you, began Shelley. Oh, let's just call it a family secret. Why don't you change clothes in the restroom and we'll wait in the hall, said Lorraine. Okay. Let's do this. said Shelley as she scooted to the edge of the exam table and put her feet on the floor. Within a few minutes, they were walking toward the elevator together. "Wait until you see the next safety feature of Site R," said Lorraine, holding up her black silk mask. "What is that?" asked Shelley. "It's for us VIPs," said Lorraine. They approached the door guards on the ground floor of Building A. "This is Shelley LaSalle. Her name is on the list," she said. "You're right," said the soldier, looking at his clipboard. He handed her a black silk mask, and the two ladies giggled as they pulled them over their faces. "Kind of makes me glad I'm nobody special," said Sarah. "It's only for a few days. Their batteries run out, and they turn into a paperweight," said Lorraine. Shelley was quiet for the entire ride to Building E at the end of the street before the road disappeared down a long tunnel to the loop between the A and B access doors. Her hands remained in her lap, and her eyes scanned the tops of the buildings and the space in between the buildings for signs of anything little and black. The 6-passenger shuttle cart stopped in front of the building, and the 2 soldiers in front of them got out to scan the area with a small handheld infrared scanner. "Okay, it's clear. Walk straight to the door, ladies," said the soldiers. "Have a great day, fellas," said Lorraine, waving her right hand slightly. The soldier at the doors opened one side and let them into the lobby. "Keep your safety hoods on until you are in the elevator," said the soldiers. The elevator doors opened, and they stepped inside. Shelley looked at Lorraine and waited for her to take her hood off. She did the same. "It doesn't pay to wear makeup, does it?" asked Shelley. "Who needs it down here? I haven't seen the sun in weeks. Makes my skin as white as a Hathaway," chuckled Lorraine. "Yeah, really," said Shelley. "Don't let them get you down," said Sarah. "Oh, I won't. I hope I don't get too used to being attacked, but it's not my first rodeo," said Shelley. "Do what Orphan would want. There is a world depending on you right now," said Lorraine. "Thank you. I'll see you later," asked Shelley. "Mint tea at 4 o'clock, said Lorraine, smiling at her. "Let's go, Sarah. We have to see Kyle at the lab first." The 2 ladies walked out of the communications section of Site R and into the waiting elevator. Within a few minutes, they had made their way to Building B, and Lorraine had pulled her black silk mask off. They took the elevator to the lab floor and walked into the airlock with the tech sergeant from the front desk. "Just slip a pair of paper footies over your shoes and grab a smock off the rack there. I guess Kyle knows you're coming," said the sergeant.
Not exactly. We're here on President's orders," said Lorraine.
"Hey, it's okay with me. It's just he's been pretty peaky lately," said the sergeant.
"We'll be fine. Thank you, sergeant," said Lorraine as the sergeant left the airlock. Lorraine pulled the door open and entered the lab with Sarah close behind. Rhino had his head down on the lab table on top of his giant tattooed arms, and Kyle was bent over a large metal box with thick cables feeding over the sides and onto the floor in several directions.
"Mr. Kramer?" asked Lorraine, standing behind him a few feet.
"Yes?"
said Kyle, standing up and pushing his glasses back up on his nose. He turned around to face her and smiled like it was Christmas.
"Lorraine! What an awesome surprise!
Welcome to my world," said Kyle. Lorraine stepped forward and put her arms around him while he put his arms around her neck and buried his face in her thick hair.
"You called me here. What do you need?" she asked softly into his ear.
"I need a brain," said Kyle softly back. Lorraine released her arms around him and felt her heart tethered inside him for a moment longer. He made no effort to disconnect.
"You already have a brain, Mr. Strawman," said Lorraine, looking deep into his eyes.
"Yeah, well, it only works here. I need it to work there," said Kyle, not blinking as well.
"We're approaching quickly, Kyle. Are you ready for the change?" asked Lorraine.
"Oh, yeah. I just don't know if I'm ready to let go yet," said Kyle, blinking finally and reaching for his lukewarm cafe mocha.
"We're all in this together, but we can't get there without you," said Lorraine. "He's de man," said Rhino, looking up from his folded arms on the table. "Hello, Rhino. I'm so glad you're here," said Lorraine, looking at him and smiling. "It's like being on the Enterprise with this guy," he said, trying to chuckle, but humbled to silence. "Can you share with me what you have seen so far?" asked Lorraine. "Oh, yeah, sure. Sarah, would you grab those two blue books over there and put them on the table? I have to make this last termination, and then we'll be okay," said Kyle, pulling the wrench back out of his pocket, spinning the nut onto the post and tightening it down. "Here you go," said Sarah, laying the books down. "Yeah, just open them up to the paperclip marker and take a look. This is what we've been working on for the last week," he said, putting the wrench back in the foam slot in the lab tool case. "Where did you get this? I mean, how did you get this?" asked Lorraine, gently turning the pages inside the books. "Dreams, mostly. They just kind of show up in my head," said Kyle. "What is it? I've seen some crazy science fiction movies, but nothing like these drawings. What are they?" asked Sarah. "The best I can tell, they're gateways. Like logic channels and binary gates, except these are multidimensional. The only problem is, I can't figure out where to plug in. These are not frequencies. They're like Fourier transform equations," said Kyle. "I have no idea what you just said," said Sarah. "They're like the keys on a piano," said Rhino. "What did you say?" asked Lorraine. "Like keys on a piano. They're very similar to the model Lisa and I built to resolve the earthquake data. Think of it like making a dot each time a certain key is pressed while playing Beethoven. The 64 keys are along the bottom of the graph, and the dots stack up to make vertical lines. The taller the line, the more times that key has been hit. And if you know what the finished wave shape is supposed to look like, you can behold Beethoven at a single glance," said Rhino, acting like he was playing the piano on the edge of the lab table. "And if you shove this into the computer, it plays the concerto," said Lorraine. "Exactamundo," said Kyle. "So what's the problem? I mean, how can I help?" asked Lorraine. "Okay, here's the deal. I love Donna, and Katie was shot, and I haven't seen the sun in a month, and these two frequency peaks keep showing up, but not the same way they did in Tennessee," said Kyle, twisting his hands together with water welling up in his eyes. Sarah looked at Rhino without smiling. He looked back at her with a slight shrug to his shoulders. Lorraine put her lips together and smiled wide and flat, with her cheeks pushing her shining blue-green eyes until they practically disappeared. She held her hands out to Kyle with her palms down. Kyle stepped forward slowly to her with his palms up. Their hands met softly and their eyes were locked together. "It's called the veil. It gets very thin sometimes in our lives, and it seems like when can almost see through it. It's where we came from, all of us. But where there are two spirits, one will always be greater than the other. They are made in pairs by taking the square root of the source. You are very old, and you have learned so much. The time has come for you to remember, Kyle. Our lives, all of our lives, depend upon you remembering. Are you with me?" asked Lorraine softly. The tears were streaming down his face, and he did not blink. Sarah walked over to stand beside Rhino, not wanting to distract from Kyle's gaze into wherever he was looking. Rhino looked at Sarah and motioned his head for her to look at their hands. The light around their hands was blurry. It seemed like minutes had gone by, and they wondered if they had been breathing. They could hear a faint sound, like it was singing in the distance. But it was singing. It was voices. Thousands of voices far away, singing. But it wasn't a melody. It was a note, a chord made of human voices, away in another room, but bleeding through to the lab deep beneath the green granite mountain. "I can hear it," said Kyle.
Remember? Asked Lorraine. Yeah, I do remember. I mean, it's familiar. I think I got it, said Kyle, blinking finally and lowering his hands. The tears emptied from his eyes, and he wiped his palms across his face. Sorry, guys. Oh, don't be. I've never seen anything even remotely like that, said Sarah. Thank you, Kyle, said Lorraine tenderly. Thank me. Thank you, he said to her. I've never been in the presence of a being quite as old as you, said Lorraine. Thank you. I'm just a kid, said Kyle, looking down as he wiped his glasses off on his shirt tail. You are a child, but you are not a kid, said Lorraine. You have never been welcome here, but you don't need to change a thing, she said, putting her hands on his shoulders. Dick made me welcome, said Kyle. It's a great thing when mates find one another, said Lorraine. Yeah, brothers, said Kyle. Oh, I think the bond is brothers and maybe even parents, said Lorraine. Yeah, sometimes he acts like he's my dad, said Kyle. Well, maybe somewhere out there you were his dad, she said, pointing to the ceiling of the lab. Just something to think about. You aren't a man, Lorraine, said Rhino. You sure are, said Sarah, holding her hand out for Lorraine to grab it. You ready to go? We have a date with some mint tea and some lost and scared generals to herd into a meeting, said Lorraine, smiling at Sarah. Thanks for coming over, said Kyle. Save us, Kyle. You can do it, said Lorraine, getting serious for a moment and then turning toward the airlock to exit the lab. Katie's going to be all right, isn't she? Asked Kyle as Lorraine grabbed the door. She's with us. Don't worry. She has something special, said Lorraine, and she pushed the door into the airlock and disappeared from their view.